Now, koalas are some of the first and most beloved animals that come to mind when you think of Australia. But we haven't always had such a romantic view of them. With this in mind, what is it about koalas that make them so lovable now? And is it our love for them enough to keep them safe? Joining us now on Drive to discuss our love for koalas and popular attitudes towards them throughout history is Kevin Markwell, an adjunct professor at the Southern Cross University. Good afternoon, Kevin.
Hi, Lizzie.
So why do we love koalas so much?
So it's a combination of factors. The koalas have a number of characteristics relating to their body and also to their behaviour that remind us broadly of human babies. So koalas are about the same size of human babies. They have a large head and large round body. Their arms and legs are kind of in the same kind of proportions as a human baby. Their eyes look directly back at us. Their eyes aren't on the sides of their heads like other native animals. And they have a large forehead. And these characteristics are ones which evolutionary biologists argue trigger a strong positive emotional response by humans because the animal resembles human babies, broadly speaking. Koalas also sit upright in trees, or they can, in the forks of trees. So there's a newspaper article published in the 1920s or 1930s, which talked about koalas sitting up in trees like little babies. And the other thing that koalas do is that young koalas, anyway, will cry when they're upset. Or, in fact, adult koalas will cry as well when they're deeply distressed. And we saw images of that when Lewis the koala, who was so badly burnt in the fires of last year, was being rescued, and he was crying as he was being rescued. So these characteristics create a deep sense of empathy with koalas. And on top of that, the koala has been, if you like, humanised in various forms of literature, kids' literature like Slinky Bill and The Magic Pudding, which have brought the koala into, if you like, Australian culture in a quite a deep way.
Well, you've just answered my next question about how popular depictions of koalas in books, television, have really helped engender public affection for these animals on top of their just general cuteness and adorableness.
Yeah.
And the adjectives could just go on and on. But koalas haven't always actually been so beloved. So how would you say our view over koalas has changed throughout history?
Yeah, so a lot of people don't realise that there's a fur trade in koala fur that operated in Australia in the 19th century and up until about the late 1920s or about 1920s, 1930s. And so hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of koala skins were exported from Australia during that time. It was only really the intervention of the American president in 1930 who banned the importation of koala and wombat skins because a lot of the koala skins were also labelled as wombat skins to sort of get around the problem of them being koala skins. So they're viewed as a resource and something from which people can make money out of the furs. But at the same time, you had the emergence of popular characters, koalas, in literature, which began to engender these feelings of strong positive emotions towards the koalas. In 1937, the Australian Koala Club was formed, and it was formed to protect koalas and raise awareness of the plight of koalas. So, I mean, koalas are fascinating in the sense that they have shared or they've been connected with humans in various different ways, and people have been concerned about them for quite a long period of time. That's reflected in things like the Koala Club, that's reflected in the fact that the koala is really the only animal that has its own hospital, for it. So you don't go to a kangaroo hospital or a fairy penguin hospital, but there are six koala hospitals named koala. Yeah. So it's almost like we have this kind of collective guilt around our treatment of koalas. And even, again, back in the 1930s, some prominent zoologists, Ellis Troughton, who wrote Bird Animals of Australia, referred to the koala as Australia's orphan and Australia's baby, and therefore, needed our protection and needed our intervention in some way.
Well, I mean, as you just said, they are Australia's baby, But despite our love for koalas, as you have mentioned, they are still forecast to be extinct in New South Wales within the next 30 years. Why is this the case when the opposite seems much more likely?
Yeah, so this is a paradox, isn't it? It's how can an animal that is so adored, not just by Australians, but by, you know, people all around the world, an animal which, you know, triggered a response from people during the bushfires to raise over $8 million for the Koala Hospital in Port Macquarie, $8 million, so I'm hoping for 25,000. And yet at the same time, we're in a situation where, because of ongoing land clearing for agriculture and also for roads and residential areas, the fact that the best food trees for koalas grew on the floodplains and the lowlands, and of course they're the areas which have been cleared for agriculture and for residential areas, the fact that climate change is now having a significant impact, not just in terms of severe fires, but also research has shown that the nutritional value of some eucalypt leaves declines in atmospheres with higher carbon dioxide concentrations. And also because we've had so many years of dry weather, the water content of eucalypt leaves has dropped as well. So, and then on top of that, there are dog attacks and chlamydia, and a retrovirus that also affects koalas. And of course, you know, research suggests that the reason why koalas are so vulnerable to these diseases is because many of them are stressed, because they have been pushed out to the edges of their habitats and they become susceptible to disease. So it's I guess ultimately it's a political question and a political decision. Are we willing to let koalas, you know, be written out of Australian culture? Or are we prepared to actually say, okay, the situation now with koalas is so severe, we have to act and act now?
Well, I don't think that many people, I mean, even before this interview, I had no idea that the situation was as grim as you are describing. Is there any way that further understanding of this koala-human relationship could help us try and save the species?
Well, I think there's a lot of debate about whether it's appropriate to sort of humanise animals, and by doing so, of course, only some animals can be humanised. Only some animals can be readily, you know, turned into lovable characters. You know, there are snakes and lizards and frogs, or some frogs do, but spiders and all kinds of birds and other mammals don't have that sort of charismatic appearance, and so they can be left behind, if you like. But one of the things that koalas can do is they can act as a kind of a flagship or an umbrella, and carry along with them the other species that inhabit the same ecosystems as them. So if you protect koalas, you need to protect koala habitat. And by protecting koala habitat, you're going to protect habitat for, you know, a wide array of other plants and animal species. So the koalas can play that role.
Well, thank you so much, Kevin, for coming on air with us this afternoon to talk about this, such an important topic that, you know, as easy as it does sound, there are a lot of things that we can all do collectively to protect koalas and all Australian wildlife. So that was Kevin Markwell, an adjunct professor at Southern Cross University, joining us this afternoon on Drive to discuss all things koalas.